listening to Italian Dish, and I'm your host, Christine. I'm an expat here in Italy. In each episode, we'll cook one Italian recipe together, and I'll dish a little bit about what it's really like living here in Italy. So, put on your apron, pour yourself a glass of wine, and let's get cooking. Ciao a tutti, benvenuti nella mia cucina. Hey guys, and welcome to my kitchen. So today I'm trying something I've never done before, which is a common theme on this podcast. I'm forever learning new dishes, and every week I cook an Italian recipe. And so something that I've seen lately all over the internet, and by the internet I mostly mean Instagram and Instagram Reels. I never really got into TikTok, but I bet it was on there too, is a focaccia. Everybody and their mother seems to be trying to make focaccia these days, and so I thought I'd give it a try too. I've got an Italian recipe here for focaccia integrale con lievito madre, which means like a whole wheat or whole grain focaccia made with sourdough starter. So lievito madre is actually in Italian what you would basically equate to a liquid like sourdough starter. So I've got my ingredients. I have a sourdough starter because I do make sourdough bread. And so I'm going to give this a try. I've never done it before. We'll see how it goes. But I've got my kitchen scale. Guys, I can try and give you equivalents as far as measurement quantities as much as possible. But flour is one of those things that really anything for baking. Flour is a powder, right? So if you're measuring it in a cup, it's gonna, maybe if you scoop it one way one day, it'll be a certain amount, and you scoop it another day, and it's like more or less, and you just really can't guarantee the quantity, especially for these types of recipes. I highly recommend getting a kitchen scale. It's just gonna make everything a lot more precise and accurate. So I've got my flour measured out. I've got a mix of whole grain flour and farina manitoba, which if you're in Italy, definitely don't skip out on using farina manitoba. You should try and find it. It has a higher grade from a scale of measuring flours with like a W. So you can go down a whole Google rabbit hole on the differences in flour. Basically, this flour is most adaptable for any bread product or like dessert or anything really that has a really, really long leavening period, a really, really long rise or proof period. So since this is going to take a long time, we're using sourdough starter, which is a much slower method of getting any bread to rise, then we definitely need farina manitoba to make this happen. So I fed my sourdough starter yesterday. I've been feeding it pretty much every day because I use it pretty often. And I have a whole grain sourdough starter. If you guys would be interested, I'll definitely do more episodes about making things with sourdough starter. But I don't know. I don't think the trend has picked up as much in Italy, or like the turn backwards in time to sort of more traditional baking as it has in the U.S. I mean, especially with the first major lockdown in 2020, I think people really started getting into sourdough baking for real. And it kind of cracks me up because I have done sourdough baking on and off for probably the past like 4 or 5 years. And it's really great. It's kind of unpredictable in terms of like, you never know if your room temperature goes up a little bit. I mean, we're working with our home kitchens, right? So it's like, I can give you instructions and guidelines, but it's really going to take your eye and your expertise and experience to learn how to work with dough and ingredients like this. Like sourdough starter really is affected by room temperature, humidity, anything with bread and like yeast and anything like that. It's just like, I kind of feel like it's a shot in the dark every time I make it because you kind of have to go with it. You have to go with the flow and just ride the wave and do your best. So here we are. We'll give it a shot. Let's get started. And as always, if you guys want more detailed instructions and recipes, I have a Patreon page where I post all of the recipes from the podcast. So anyone that's interested can cook along with us. They are only available to my Patreon members in the cooking club. And so it's a fun way to, you know, be more involved and to support the podcast. So make sure to check that out if you're interested. For everyone else, let's get going. So I've got the flour all measured out. And now I've got to add my lievito madre già rinfrescato. So that means like fed within the last 24 hours, basically. Measuring out 120 grams of that. Just directly into the bowl that I have the flour in. And I really love baking with a kitchen scale because you just kind of dump until you get the measurement you need and go. So that works for me. All right. Almost. Trying to be precise, as I did just say all that about measuring and whatnot. Okay, that looks to be the amount I need. And then for you sourdough lovers, sourdough starter people, since you've just used your sourdough starter, it's a great time to feed it. And basically that just means add more flour and water. So go ahead and do that. Now we need to add the amount of water for the recipe before we start mixing our dough. So this is like room temperature water. Let's see, measure that out. And I'm starting this in the afternoon so that it can continue to like ferment, do the bulk rise kind of in the afternoon when it's like warmer. And then I'll let it go overnight in my fridge. I think it just added too much water. Well, see what I can do. Maybe I can pour some of it off. I think I can. Classic me. Adding too much. Let's see. Still too much. Yes. When I say I've never made this recipe before, now you have proof. This is just like forever my woes in making anything on this podcast is that I'm not an expert chef and I'm also not an expert podcaster. So it's like double tasking, doing two things that I'm not an expert at once. You know, live and learn. Live and learn. All right. Easy to do. Easy to mess up. We can just edit all this out later, right? I'll keep all this in because you guys know I keep it real on this podcast. Okay, it's much better. It's still a tiny bit too much water. Oh my gosh. It's going to work out. It'll all come out in the wash. Let's see. Okay, that's just going to have to do. A couple extra grams never hurt anybody, right? Oh my gosh. So pour out that extra water that I didn't need. And now what do we need to do next? Okay, so we've got our flour mixed in with our lievito madre and the water. And now we're just going to mix it together until we get a smooth dough. If you have a, not a bread machine, what's the word I want? Like a stand mixer, you can definitely use that. I do not, and so I'll be doing this by hand. But I kind of like making bread products by hand. I feel like it's just, it's a hands-on thing. Like you kind of need to get in there and learn what the flour feels like. And this is coming from someone who really doesn't like getting her hands wet in general. Like I hate washing dishes and getting my hands wet. I always like to prefer to wear like kitchen gloves or like cleaning gloves, rubber gloves. There we go. While I wash my hands, because I don't like the sensation. But I do cook all the time, and I get my hands dirty all the time when I cook. So it's not like I'm a total snob. I just don't know. It's something about when I wash dishes. But yeah, so if you guys have a stand mixer, you're going to want to mix that for a while. Well, I guess by hand, you'll probably mix it for longer than if you have a mixer, but yeah, I'm just sort of working in all of that flour and also the lievito madre. So you want to make sure that's evenly distributed. And really, once the water hits the flour, it's going to start making bread. Like, this is the early stages of bread. It's just not anywhere near ready. So if you've never made anything with sourdough, I said before, and you probably are aware, it's a very slow method. So it's kind of, I like to think of it as a dramatic method. It's like a long buildup for something that you are hoping will pay off. And so I'm kind of using my hand to like slap the dough to mix it. You can hear that probably. Like picking up the dough, slapping on the side and mixing it. And as soon as we've added, as soon as we added the starter, it's like feeding your starter. So it's like we've introduced new flour to the sourdough starter. So that's going to be like, they're hungry. All the little yeast guys are hungry. And they're like, dang, we got a buffet of new flour. Let's go to town. And they start eating all the flour. And your bread is already starting to ferment, you know, very, very beginning stages. But there's work already happening. So now that my hands are fully sticky and wet with this dough, I'm going to have to rinse them off real quick so that I can get the oil and salt without making a mess. These are the kind of things that it's like, I don't think a lot of Italians, well, okay, I'm about to make a generalization, but these are the kind of bread products that are so cheap and so easy to find at like a grocery store that I'm sure a lot of people are like, why are you going to the trouble of making that from scratch, you know? But that's just my style. I always overdo it in terms of like trying to make things from scratch that are maybe above my pay grade, above my abilities. But anyhow, okay, so I do need to measure more. There's my scale. Now I need to add the salt and olive oil. So here we go. Let's measure that out. Just about 15 grams of salt. Da, 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 da. Don't want to overdo it like I did with the water earlier. Oh my God. Here we go. Trying to be precise. You guys are along for the ride. One more gram. Okay. Now olive oil. Zero out my scale. Get my olive oil. Let's see. Fun tip for all of you who maybe aren't experienced in using a kitchen scale, pour in or dump in less than you think and then let the number come up, because once it takes a minute to register on a digital scale. And so if you do that, you will have less of a chance of screwing up like I did earlier and overdoing it and measuring, putting in too much. And especially since you're like dumping it into a bowl, the smart thing to do would have been to measure out ingredients in separate bowls, wouldn't it? who cares about that? That's fine. But anyway, so now we've got the oil and the salt in there, and we're going to keep like working the dough for about 10 minutes. Oh my gosh, I really don't want to do that, but here we are. You just want to make sure the oil and the salt dissolves in, and then that the oil sort of gets absorbed in. And even just after like a second, however long that took me to add the oil and the salt, the dough feels a little bit different. And that's the thing, like when you're making dough, and I say a lot of times that I'm not an expert on this podcast about the recipes that I make, but I'm a little more experienced with doughs and bread making in general. I will tell you one thing that I have learned, a little tip. Just pay attention to it. Which might be hard to do if you're listening to a podcast like I am, or recording a podcast while you're cooking. But pay attention and like observe, note the differences each time that you come back to your dough. So right now it's like feels a little bit more uniform, like it's formed a blob that's like sticking together. It's not just like a chunky mess. Now it's kind of like, I mean, it's still really rough. It's not smooth and it's not pillowy, but it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's more homogeneous. There we go. And I'm really curious about this because I've never made like a really whole grain, high whole grain percentage dough before. So this could either be really good or really bad. You know, I figured I'd give it a shot. And I mean, I love all bread products pretty much. If I could eat pizza every day, I would be the happiest person alive. And I'm sure that accounts for a lot of us on this planet, but either we don't have great access to amazing pizza or we're like trying to be healthy or whatever. I mean, I do eat pizza and pasta pretty frequently. I do live in Italy, so can't complain there, but it does take its toll on your waistline. I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm like being a proponent of like anything remotely diet culturally, but man, the high carbs really do, they take their toll. They are a thing. I used to run a lot before my son was born. I tried to keep running after he was born, but I found that it was like I could either wake up way earlier than everybody else meaning just my husband and my son, and go running in the morning, or I could sleep. And some days I like made the sacrifice and I was like, okay, I'm going to get up way earlier. But what with the hours I work and just general mom life, I just found that I was like exhausting myself a bit too much. So now I've just like opted to do exercise at like different times of the day that don't involve me waking up at like 6 or 5 a.m. And also because we live in a really small apartment where I risk, every time I try and wake up before my son, I risk waking him up, which would just cause me to have to start my day earlier in terms of like childcare. And I don't want to do that. I would love him to sleep in until the time that he needs to. So yeah, I mean, he is a great sleeper. I'm really lucky in that regard, but I really value my sleep and my rest. Also because, like I said, I work kind of odd hours. And so, you know, girls gotta sleep. And yeah, you just have to make your own decisions there. But I was talking about how I used to run. And I used to run a lot in the Cascine Park in Parco delle Cascine in Florence. But then we moved kind of farther away from the park. And now we live kind of in the north end of the city. And it's a lot hillier up here. A lot harder to run on hills if you are not super in shape. And believe it or not, I used to be pretty decently in shape. I would run half marathons. And it's funny, I used to introduce myself to my students. So I teach English. It's my day job besides mom. And I used to always talk about running in my intro. Like, oh, I love running. Now I don't really do that. So I've stopped telling people I love running, which is kind of weird. I don't know. It's like not a change in identity as much as just a temporary shift, I guess, because I had a student actually months ago when I came back from maternity leave. She told me the same thing happened when her son was born. She was like, I used to run and then my son was born and I all of a sudden just like priorities shifted and rest became really important to me, or like, you know, other parts of my day. And she was like, you know what, you can go back to running whenever you feel ready, like don't feel guilty about it. And it was so encouraging and I really appreciated that insight from another, you know, another mom. I mean, I've had such a journey with running in Italy too. It's like the only half marathons that I've ever run were here in Florence. And I've done other races too. We did like a a night run once that was really cool. It was like an urban trail run. So it was like partially in Florence, it was the urban part, and partially kind of in the countryside around. And that was really hard. It was a really difficult run. It was like how long was that run? I don't remember, maybe 13K. It wasn't a half marathon, but it was pretty intense nonetheless. And, you know, I've done other runs just in general. And I do really love running, but like last year, well, so, you know, after my son was born, I was like, I'm going to get back into shape. I'm going to run the next year, the half marathon, the year after he's born, postpartum. that was a bit lofty thinking. And yeah, I mean, I guess I could have really gone after running with my whole heart and made that my priority, but I didn't. And I guess that doesn't mean I don't love running still. It's just that it's kind of taken less of an important place in my life at this time. So it's like, I plan on getting back into running because I love it still. Whenever I'm out and about and I see people running, I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous. But it's pretty demanding as an exercise for sure. Just like breaking bread. it requires time. It requires dedication. It requires energy. Interest. You know, and it's just like, I don't really have all that much time anymore. Like, I've kind of started doing other things. Like, I podcast now, and I also I bake more, and like I don't know, try and make more Italian recipes. Like, that takes up a good chunk of my time as is. And then, you know, what time I do have to exercise, I like to do something that I can do even if he's around. It's like, I tried running with the stroller in my neighborhood around here, but okay, so first of all, I'm not super, super in shape postpartum anyways, and then trying to get back in shape or in like a hilly neighborhood, trying to run in a really, really hilly neighborhood, that's already difficult. And then on top of that, I was like trying to push a stroller and run, and it was like, it's not happening. So I think if we had kept living near the park where it's a lot flatter and it's just like paved, I probably would have kept up with running. And like, that's okay. I mean, that's just not where we live, and that's not what our current life is right now. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to like feel like you've stepped away from something that was really important to you in the past, and that like, it's not that you're completely abandoning it. It's like you're, I don't know, dealing with your present reality. And like, maybe you have to wait, and it's going to be in a different season in your life. And like, that's okay. I mean, if anything, I'm sure a lot of people have had changes in their own hobbies and just in general in your lifestyle with the pandemic. I mean, a lot of times I set out to record these episodes and not mention it. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to talk about COVID. I'm not going to talk about the pandemic today. I want to talk about this. And I have everything planned out, and then things just don't go according to plan. I mean, this is such a big shift in all of our lives right now. It's a pandemic, like it's a global issue, that I think it would be odd not to mention it, or when it does come up. Like, it's useless pretending like things are different than they are. It's just, let's face it, you know? I think, I don't know. I've gotten a little better at that maybe since becoming a mom, because it's like kind of forced to live in the present moment a lot. Like, I don't get a lot of time to think about, you know, weeks and weeks ahead from today, I need to deal with the diaper at hand or the drama in my living room right now. Like, it's just like, there's not, it's very like put out each and in every individual fire right now, which keeps me preoccupied and keeps me distracted. But also, it's just, it's a good like meditative practice, like for life, learning to really, really be in the moment. But you guys, if you're like starting to really think that I'm getting off track here, I am. And if you can't hear, I have still been mixing my dough. So if you're making yours, you're probably doing the same, I assume. you'll notice as you like pick up the dough that it and slap it back that it forms like longer strands before ripping. And that's because we're developing gluten, which is good. That will be the strength network of the dough, l'impasto. So now I'm just going to let it rest. So that's another important part about making gluten, developing gluten, making a great dough, and about life is rest. Rest is really important. So, guys, don't overwork your dough. Don't overwork yourselves. All right, so I'm going to let this take a rest, and I'll get back to you guys in a bit. Okay, guys, so I've let the focaccia dough sort of rest for a while, and you might be wondering, how long is a while? All of the instructions of what I've done will be written out in the post for my patron members, for my members on Patreon. There we go. But now I'm going to talk you through while I do a quick like stretch and fold of the dough. And this is kind of a good technique to use when you're working with any sort of really high hydration dough or a dough that's like really sticky, which it's sticky because it has a lot of water in the total ratio of water to flour. I actually haven't calculated the hydration in this dough, but it's pretty sticky. I'd say it's probably like at least 60-65%. Just from my experience of working with sourdough bread. But since it's so sticky, instead of adding more flour in, because I think instinctively you might think, okay, well, I'm going to use some flour on my hands and that'll help prevent sticking to my hands, but that's actually going to do the opposite. The flour will just stick to the dough, which will stick to your hands. It's just going to be a mess. So the best way to handle a stickier dough is actually to get your hands a little bit wet. So I'm only getting my right hand wet because that's what I'm going to use to handle the dough. And what you're going to do is, I just got it like a couple drips of water, shook it off. It's a little wet, but it's fine. And you're going to take your hand and sort of stick it along the side of the bowl and kind of lift up from the bottom, lift the dough up, stretch it up, and flop it over. And then making little turns, just going to go around the dough, doing more stretches and folds, doing the same thing. So I'm like picking up the bottom part of the dough, sort of stretching it up and folding it over. And this is going to help strengthen the gluten and just like strengthen our dough, develop more gluten, which is good. I think gluten has almost become a dirty word in modern eating, but like, that's kind of crazy because bread is made with gluten. Like when you add water to the flour, it activates gluten. And unless you're using a gluten-free flour. But anyhow, I don't want to go into that too much, but just know that that is what's going to give strength to your dough and help it rise and create those nice fluffy air pockets when it bakes. It will just be a textural dream. So I'm just continuing to go around the dough and turn it, stretching it up and folding it over. You don't want to press too hard because you don't want to deflate the dough. And since the bulk rise is continuing, you're going to notice that the dough will come away from the sides of the bowl a little bit easier. And that when you stretch it, it'll kind of stretch out, but it'll stay together before like tearing. And that's because your gluten is getting stronger, gluten network. And I just do this a couple turns around the bowl entirely. So if you go all the way around the dough once, it's like one turn, one full like stretch and fold. Going around a couple of times, maybe like three. You don't want to overwork it because like I said, you don't want to deflate the dough, but you also don't want to tear the dough. So just be gentle with it and keep stretching and folding. And then once the bulk rise is completed, which depending on your temperature in your kitchen or wherever you're letting your dough sit out to rise and ferment, you're going to want to put it in the fridge overnight. The lowest rack of your fridge is ideal because that'll be where it's the coldest. And you don't really have to do anything fancy to do that. It's not going to like turn into a monster in your fridge overnight. You don't have to put it in any special containers. You can just keep it in the same bowl. If you really want to, you can try and add more olive oil around the sides if you're worried about it sticking, but like, I don't think you'll have any problems. You can use like a bench knife or like a dough scraper to help you get it out of the bowl in the morning, but I mean, it should be fine. I'm very much just a it should be fine kind of person on a lot of things, so trust me at your own peril, I guess, but I think it'll honestly work out. I've never really had big problems fermenting dough overnight in the fridge, and since this has been at room temperature all day, it's pretty much at a good level of fermentation. Overnight, like, the flavors will strengthen a bit, like it'll get more pronounced, the sourdoughness, but it's not going to like be tangy or anything weird in one overnight stay in your fridge. Like I say, it'll continue to ferment, but like fermentation's almost going to completely stop because the temperature will be so low in your fridge that your dough won't like balloon up into anything weird. It'll just kind of hang out for a bit. So that's where we're at with our focaccia. I'll get back to you guys when we move on to the next step. Okay, you guys, so it's the morning after my focaccia dough has been in the oven, in the fridge all night. On the recipe, it says to let the impasto, let the dough like maturare overnight, to let it like mature overnight. Just thought I needed to share that with all of you. I would love to put myself in the fridge and just mature overnight. Anyway, so now the next step is to spread it out on a like a baking dish or sheet tray, whatever you have. Make sure it's like big enough, like rectangular. The dough is still pretty like stretchy, and you want to make sure wherever you are spreading it out to bake it, it's like well oiled. So you've greased it with a lot of olive oil. And so I'm doing that now. And if you find that as you try to like spread it out to begin that it kind of resists, don't worry, just kind of spread it out as much as you can without being too aggressive, and then let the dough rest again. You could like let it sit for another, I don't know, 15 minutes before trying to stretch it out again. It will like the gluten will relax and then it'll let you do that just fine. So it's like the dough is really soft and it's like very bubbly, which is good. It's definitely now like oiled on both sides. And now we just want to let it sit and like rise basically again for another like 2-ish hours. Again, times are very approximate here because it really depends on like how warm your kitchen is. It is January, so it's kind of cold in mine, but we'll see how long it takes at room temperature. You can try and like cover this, but I wouldn't put plastic wrap on it, A, because plastic wrap is evil, and B, because it will potentially stick, even though you've like oiled it a lot. So I would just leave it. I mean, this is not going to dry out in like 2 hours, so it'll be fine, especially with all the olive oil. And as it's like rising, you'll notice it'll bubble up some more because that yeast is going to get active again in your sourdough starter, your lievito madre. And that will help like puff up your focaccia one last time before we end up baking it. So hopefully this will be ready for lunchtime. My son is going crazy in the room. We'll see how this goes. Wish me luck, guys. I'll check back in when it's time to bake. Okay, you guys, so our focaccia has been resting, rising, proofing, whatever you want to call it, for at least 2 hours at room temperature. I can see some bubbles that are starting to grow along the surface of mine. It looks like it's puffed up a bit. It'll finish rising in the oven when we bake it off. But now we're going to go towards the last step before we pop it in the oven, which is we're going to do the traditional like little holes sort of in the top, like the little wells that you punch along the surface. And then you have to spread water and olive oil, more olive oil, along the top and add some salt. So let's get to doing that. Just going to use a little bit of olive oil to make sure my hands aren't going to stick to the dough. And you can see it's like, well, I can see. It's really like jiggly, which is good. It means it's been fermenting well and it's ready. So without like popping a bunch of holes, you're just going to take your fingers and sort of create some indents, push along the surface. Sort of like push in to the surface to sort of get little wells. And this will create texture and also like a little spot for the water and olive oil to rest and the salt to accumulate. It's going to be great. And it'll give it the traditional look as well, which is nice. So you kind of punch don't get too aggressive, but press little indents into the surface of your focaccia. And if it's fermented well, this shouldn't be anything that'll really damage the structure of the dough, or just sort of, like I said, looking at the surface. And now I'm going to use some of the water that I've set aside with olive oil, and that'll collect in those little divots. And get some rosemary. Got some fresh rosemary here. Let's see. Start like picking off these little sprigs, spreading that about. This is gonna smell delightful in the oven for sure. I've already got my oven preheating. And once it's preheated, we're almost ready to pop it in. Just gotta add the salt. So some more rosemary. I'm pretty liberal with the rosemary because I really like it. Do what you feel is best on that. As far as quantity, let's see, a little bit more. It's gonna be so fragrant. You could also do like other toppings on this as well. Like you don't have to do rosemary. Rosemary is pretty classic, but you could always do like tomatoes or onions or olives even, if that's your jam. I'm gonna rinse my hands off. They're very oily. Okay, and finally, I'm using little like flaked salt. You can use sale grosso, so like big crystals of salt, if that's more your thing. Whatever you have, honestly, even just table salt, just don't go too crazy because you can always salt it more later. And there's salt in the dough as well, obviously. This is just to give it a nice, crisp, salty crunch as well, which is why I love this flaked salt. It's just like got a great texture, basically. Pretty liberal with the salt, if you ask me. I just like salty focaccia. Oh my gosh, this is going to be delightful. I'm really excited about this. Let's see. All right, we're going to pop it in the oven for about 30 minutes. And we'll see how it is later. Okay, you guys, this focaccia is actually insane. It's so crunchy on the outside and soft and fluffy in the middle. I'm definitely going to be remaking this. This is incredible. What do you think, Liam? It's yummy. What do you think? There you have it. Italian dish baby giving his 2 cents. All right, guys. Hope you enjoy this recipe. Ciao. Thank you for listening to this episode of Italian Dish. If you enjoyed this recipe and know someone else who loves Italian food, share it with them. Buon appetito, ragazzi. And until next time, alla prossima. Ciao.